Richard Roth with The Passage on WGXC. That was Maria Callas, who was born in New York City but educated in Greece, the birthplace of my guest this month. After the interview, Maurice Ravel's Piano Concerto for the Left Hand, which was commissioned by the Austrian pianist Paul Wittgenstein, who lost his right arm during World War I. This is Richard Roth with The Passage on WGXC, and I'm here at Inky Editions on the Hudson waterfront with George Tsalikis. George, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Richard. It's nice to be here.
Now, how long have you had Inky Editions?
As you know, it was an old building. I started building the space back in August of 2014, and it took me about a year. So officially, we're open for 2 years, since September of 2015.
And what brought you to Hudson?
Well, that's a good question. I needed to get out of the city, look for an art community, or to build an art community, and I was looking for somewhere upstate. Upstate was an abstract word for me. I didn't know what that means.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Greece. So the fact that there was a train that came to Hudson, it was definitely a decisive factor to take a train and visit the place.
And had you heard about its kind of reputation for artists and galleries and so on?
Yeah, as I started researching areas, and I should say that another reason that made me look at Hasson is that year I had applied for Art Omai residency. So I looked around that area to see what other towns might be. And, you know, you go on the internet and you start reading the news, and Hudson came up a lot, and that helped.
Now, what were you looking to do at Art Omai?
Residency.
A residency, what particular, did you have a particular project in mind?
Yes. You know, because that was back in 2014, I forgot what the application really, but I was working on a project which started right after Hurricane Sandy in 2013, and I think it was related to that. I was one of the people that was displaced by Sandy, and that was another factor that made me decide at some point to move out of New York City, because I think this kind of events will be happening more often.
Now, what neighborhood was that?
It was Long Island City in Queens, very close to the water.
And so you had been interested in printmaking for some time?
Yeah, it wasn't that long. You know, like most of the art students, I took a printmaking class in college, and then I moved into other things, mostly new media, filmmaking, video. I got interested after 2012 in printmaking when I got a scholarship while living in New York City. And the scholarship was in a printmaking studio, pretty much like the one that I have now, in Midtown Manhattan, that was called Manhattan Graphics. So that was what started me in this, to get more interested and more serious, I should say, in printmaking. I was allowed to use the studio and taking, you know, free classes, have free access to equipment, that type of thing. And, you know, when I moved to Hudson, I wanted to continue that, and I noticed that there was no printmaking in the area like the studios that I was using in the city. And I never thought about building anything like that ever. I just wanted to continue as an individual artist, making my art and applying to residencies. But the fact that there was no printmaking space, I said to myself, maybe I can buy a press and do prints on my own. But one thing led to another, and, you know, somebody took me down here and they showed me the building, and I started thinking, well, I always want to have to create an art community. So I thought, basically, I thought about doing it myself as opposed to, you know, joining a community that was not existing. As I keep saying, printmaking is communal by nature. The fact that you need to come to a print studio and do your prints around other people, that makes it communal as opposed to that aspect of, you know, the romantic idea of the solitary artist working by themselves in the studio.
And people can also come here and learn printmaking. Is that true?
That's exactly right. Yeah, that's another aspect of the community building, which is the educational component. Now I find myself, you know, by the way, I haven't done any of my own art for the past 3 years, because now I became, you call it what do you want, facilitator, you know, administrator. I'm running the place, and I was going to say now I try to build other artist careers, and, you know, education is part of it.
Could someone come who had never had any experience whatsoever in printmaking?
Yeah, that happens a lot up here. You know, of course, when I started building this space, you try to see what kind of a direction you would take because there's so many possibilities. And initially, I wanted to build a space, you know, pretty much people like myself, let's say emerging or mid-career artists that can come to a serious printmaking studio and do their prints. But again, you have to adjust to the reality of the situation, Hudson in this case. And there are a lot of people up here that haven't done printmaking. So we have a lot of beginners. So, you know, the vision is still there, but you keep changing direction or diverting from your initial goals.
Now, do you keep some materials here as well? Or would people have to bring, say, their own paper and ink and so on?
Yeah, for the time being, they bring their own paper. But yeah, for the most part, at this point, is they're taking classes. And that's it's part of the fee that they pay for the class. So it's not really an issue. But when it does become a studio like the one that I always want to have, where artists come and print here for contract, as they call it, or with a master printer, then at this point, you know, I will be providing the materials, which will be part of the fee that they pay. Right now, the fee is very affordable. It's almost free, so they bring their own materials.
Do people of all ages partake?
Yes. We had our youngest student in the classes last year was 16 years old, and our oldest is 76. So, yeah, we have a wide range of ages.
Now, you have a lot of space. How much space do you have?
It's a 5,000 square feet studio that includes a gallery.
And maybe the gallery is something like 40% or something like that?
I would say probably one-third of it.
And so in the gallery, you're having succeeding shows for a month or so at a time. Is that right?
Yes. It's we try not to have empty walls.
And these are not necessarily only people who are doing the printmaking here.
Right. Again, there's a very small group of people that do prints here. And I did it the first year. And, you know, I'm learning who is in the area and who can do what. And, again, the vision and the direction of the space keeps changing. Most of the contacts that I have are in New York City. And I want to build a bridge between the city and here so I can bring serious artists from the city and combine it with artists that are either learning or they're still emerging in this area. So we have both aspects. I keep saying the work speaks for itself. So this is the first aspect that I'm looking at. And obviously, I'm not, you know, just another gallery that can have shows in any medium. I have shows in print. This is a place that it was built to promote the art of print. So it's always about print and printmaking and its various aspects. And that's how I start, as opposed to, you know, putting certain parameters.
And so right now you have a show of monoprints?
That's correct, with Catherine Howell, who is from the city, and she also happens to live up here somewhere. She teaches at the New York Academy of Arts in Tribeca. And I only met her recently, so it was a good connect.
Well, you have the advantage of having plenty of wall space.
It's I have to say, one thing we have to get going for us, it's the amazing space. Not only it's 5,000 square feet, but it's also the ceiling, a very high, you know, 20 feet high. So that invites also installations. I always want to have large print installations, and I'm working on it. It's not easy to find, you know, printmaking installation artists that can do that. But, you know, we could be one of the first galleries that do that.
You're also flooded with light, with natural light, which makes it nice.
Yeah, and that was not... It was not luck, it was part of planning. You know, when they showed me this space, this building, it's a raw industrial space. It was a huge dark cave. So I thought if I want to invite people here to print and to have a gallery, I should cut through the wall and create an entrance and windows to invite natural light. Natural light for me, it's one of the most basic things in life. You know, whenever I'm looking for a new house, that's the first thing I'm looking at, natural light.
And you live right here in Hudson too?
I live in Hudson, yes. I live in Hudson. I started looking in other places, country places around. But, you know, it wasn't practical. And plus, I'm still a city person, so.
You'd rather prefer town life to being way out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
So you, where did you go to college? Where did you study art?
I went to schools in Boston. I got my bachelor's from Massachusetts College of Art. I did graduate studies in MIT for a year. And I didn't complete my degree, and the only reason I didn't complete it because I didn't have the money to pay for the tuition. At that point, I was a foreign student with a visa, and I didn't have money, you know, access to either borrow money or, and as you can imagine, MIT is it's a fortune.
It's an expensive school, I'm sure. Is that where you got into the multimedia?
That's where I got into that's why I applied for MIT. Because I was already into multimedia since I was in Massachusetts College of Art. And then about 10 years ago, I went to Boston Museum School to complete another useless art degree. But it wasn't for the degree. It was, you know, I always like being around artists. Again, it's a community aspect of it. And I think, especially a lot of younger artists, when they get out of school, where they have a kind of support, they feel, many of them, they feel like they are in front of a cliff because nobody cares, you know, to talk about the art and give them, you know, supportive comments. So you can say that in a way that's another aspect of it, you know, the community building. It's almost like, you know, the support that you find in school and getting, you know, hanging out with people that have similar interests.
And have you found that there's a community of artists in Hudson?
I thought that was the case, but to be honest with you, if I had to say yes or no, I'm going to say no. I don't know if it's a sign of our times, if it happens in other places. I don't think that's the case because, you know, there are other places that are more real. You know, I heard a lot of good things about Detroit and other communities. I in my experience, I found there is a lot of individualism up here in Hudson. So, you know, everybody does their own thing. And you know, now that I'm here on a daily basis, I get to see all that by myself, you know, on my own, I should say. So I wish things were like, I don't know, back in the 60s, Soho, you know, where all the artists used to know each other and get together. You could say it's part of the culture, yeah. You know, again, me coming from, even though I lived here most of my life, coming from another culture, you get, these things are clear.
Now, in Greece, did you grow up the countryside or cities?
No, I was always, you know, in the big city, so that's why I found it a little hard to live in a country, even though I romanticized for a long time after living in New York City, you know, where quality of life, it's an issue. So, in a way, Hudson, it's the best of both worlds, you might say. You know, you get both aspects, the urban and, you know, the more quiet life.
Do you go back and forth to the city much?
To New York City, yeah. I would say every 5 weeks. I'm trying to. But, you know, because I run this space by myself, I'm not able. I miss a lot of good shows or conferences that I would like to. But there are things that I wouldn't miss for anything. For example, there's the print fair that is coming up, you know, once a year in the city. So I always go to that. This year it's the end of October. That's why I go to meet, to see, you know, good prints and meet other businesses like ours from all over the world.
Do artists come to that as well?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a big, you know, it's the equivalent of the Armory show, but it's equivalent for the printmaking world, the print world, I should say. You were here last night, and actually, in terms of numbers of people, even though it was not a huge number, we had a very large quality of people. Kiki Smith was here. She didn't have to, you know. The fact that she showed up for this, it showed me that she wanted to. And she stayed for over an hour with Valerie Hammond. We had Valerie Hammond, Kiki Smith, Julie Evans, all, you know, top-notch artists, people that I haven't seen since the beginning. You know, for some reason, either through a word of mouth or through the promotion, which I always do, and you never know. You know, again, we didn't see large numbers, but all the people that came, they were all quality people. So I was very happy about that aspect. Yeah, and not to mention that it was David Ebony, one of the founders of Art in America, I believe, and he's still a contributor editor. In fact, I got an email from him because he got a very high impression of this space, and he ended up talking about the space and good words. And I said, you look familiar. We ended up talking about Judy Pfaff, and I said, I saw Judy Pfaff when she was at CR10. I don't know. Did you go to that?
Yes.
Okay. He said, I organized that. I said, so I was there at the table talk, you know, lecture, a panel discussion. And he said, yeah, I was there. And I said, that's why you look familiar. So that and other connecting points, he really got connected. And so he sent me this email. He also sent me the catalog from that show. And he said, Judy Pfaff is coming from England. She has a show there. As soon as she comes, he's going to invite her here. So to see the show, and who knows. I mean, speaking about installation space, this is a perfect space for an installation. You know, she does this chandelier-like paper things.
Right, right.
And I think
yeah, in fact, there were things that CR10 didn't really have the height for.
Right, exactly. And it could be, and you know, before I met him, maybe over a year and a half ago, I was talking to a woman who now works for Olana, and she said she had told me back then that she could bring Judy Pfaff, and she said that she could do something here because once you mentioned Judy Pfaff, I said I don't have money to pay her for installation. She said she could probably do it for free. You know. You know, you probably get a grant or fund to do some kind of a permanent, I don't know, permanent installation, things hanging from the ceiling. That would be kind of cool. Because then you see the space in a different context. You know, right now it's still a good space, but, and I like the fact that the space is not oversaturated, you know. That's what a lot of people who like the space told me.
Yeah, it makes it really kind of luxurious that there's just so much space.
Yeah, a big open space. And that's why I didn't use dividers. You know, I could divide the kitchen, for example, but instead of using one of those walls, as they have, you know, in offices in the city, cubicles, I decided to use, that barrier, the terrarium. So basically that's an indication that the kitchen begins after the terrarium. So this kind of ideas, you build as you go, you know, as an artist. Sooner or later, you can plan for these things, but sooner or later, as you work, they become part of the process. So again, you know, the space itself, I think, what we have going for us, I can't say that, you know, it's a huge success in terms of having people taking classes here. It's still slow, you know. It's a slow process. Yeah, I keep saying the word of mouth is the best thing because you know I'm out on social media and I send press releases to every single place. But if you don't hear it from somebody who trusts somebody else, you know, last night we had people from that work in major places. I'm sure they're gonna give the good word to others about this show and about Ink Edition. So. You know, that's how it works.
How long will this show be here?
Oh, it's, you know, it's a good show. So we decided to keep it at least until November 19. And we'll see, you know, if we get close to the that time. Sometimes I extend it, so it depends on the circumstances. Catherine Howe was director of White Columns Gallery in New York City, you know, a legendary gallery that now is a non-for-profit. But she's represented by, you know, some major galleries in New York City. Leslie Heller Workspace in Lower East Side, White Columns, Von Lintel Gallery, both in New York City and Los Angeles. Little John Contemporary in New York City, and many others. She has a show coming up in Dallas in October. Yeah, she also saw with MoMA PS1.
Yeah, White Columns.
Yeah, it's one of those, you know, one of those places that I think made New York City what it was, you know, back before Soho was created, because that's basically when they started. It was a space, you know, in a way I see similarities between what they did back, you know, 40 years ago and what we do up here in Hudson. You come in a space where nobody wants to come, you know, in this area. 3 years ago, it was a no man's land, literally. So, you know, we started putting walls and windows, and all of a sudden it became a gallery that shows beautiful art objects, and people will come and work here.
Now, you also have the prospect of a $10 million renovation in the neighborhood, which can only be a good thing, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good thing for Hudson, but I have no idea what that means for...
Well, it's primarily in this area, from Front Street over to...
Waterfront, yeah, I believe, from what I have been reading, they want, you know, that warehouse in the waterfront, they want to develop that into some kind of a museum. And, you know, $10 million is not that huge amount of money. If they, you know, just by renovating that building by itself and whatever they end up doing in waterfront in terms of parks, then the money is gone. I don't think any of the businesses will see any of the benefit of that.
Now, the Dunn Warehouse, which is that? Is that the one that you say that they're renovating for a museum?
Yeah, it's, you know, once you cross the railroad. It's by the water. And I believe they recently had, you know, they had a cocktail event. Did you like any particular works from Catherine? Did you talk to her?
I did talk to her. Particularly like that deep red and black one there in the corner.
Oh, yeah, that totally stands out.
Yeah, she told me that was her favorite as well.
It's such, in many respects, first of all, it's very vivid. You might say it's high definition, if, you know, if you talk in digital terms. But the composition itself, just sometimes, you know, things come together.
Yeah, everything works.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I like the work very much. I like those black and white ones also. I'm not sure what the technique was for those in the other alcove.
Oh, yeah, a lot of people like those black and whites. They appeal to me because I am kind of a monochromatic person. I love black and white. The kind of the minimalist aspect of it, you know.
Now, is she using oil colors for these?
She uses actually both oil and I saw a couple pieces involve acrylics, but yeah, mostly oils. You know, this kind of vivid, vibrant effect that you get, only oils can give that.
And I guess what she does is to paint it on a plate and then put it through a press, right?
Yes, all these are prints that came out of the plates and the press, yes. And obviously we display a lot of the plates themselves, which are, you know, paintings by themselves. They're in the, like the ones that you like, you know. She calls them carborundum reverse painting. So this is not a print. It's a painting.
And so she keeps the plate then. She leaves whatever she's painted on the plate, she leaves there.
And that was, you know, initially that was her intention from the very beginning. It wasn't, you know, many of the artists produce a plate to produce either a monoprint or an edition, and then they get rid of it. But this particular you know, I'm sure she had a different approach, because she approached it as a artwork, like in a painting. She's a painter, basically, not a printmaker. She approached it as a painting, and then she wanted to make a monoprint out of that. And actually, she told me that the monoprint process informed this kind of imagery that you see in the painting. You know, so for example, she made some of the monoprints. Over time, she came back, she did another painting based on what she learned from the monoprint. And that's when I really like to hear from artists, that they learn something from printmaking and they go back to their painting and they produce something new. And this kind of dialogue back and forth, I think a perfect example of that was one of my favorite artists, Richard D. Benkorn, you know, who was, I believe, he was kind of resistant to the printmaking process, but, you know, he used a master printer. But, and he probably hated, you know, the technical aspects of printmaking. So he used a printer when he was doing his prints at Crown Point Press in San Francisco. But that's where he learned, he produced proofs. And based on those proofs, he would make his next decision into the next piece, into the next piece. And, you know, that kind of a dialogue between mediums, I think it's a beauty, the beauty of, you know, printmaking. And that's why I eventually ended up doing printmaking myself.
I suppose a commercial lease here we were paying by the school. It's sort of based on the
I put a lease because of the, I mean, the landlord never saw these kind of improvements by anybody. So obviously I had a long lease, you know, he can't kick me out. Because, and I have to say that the fact that we came here and we started this, others saw it and encouraged other businesses to come. And now you see galleries from Warren Street coming here. I know that we play a major part in this because, you know, we have seen it happening in the city. You know,
I'm sure it did. The fact that your place is so shaped up.
But the quality of it, it's because, you know, if you walk to the rest of the building, you're going to see plywood structures. You know, people try to do something very cheaply to do their own business inside. And you live there like a rat. But here you see high quality, you know. And I mean, I had designers who came here and architects that, they asked me, you know, if I had background in this. And so they have high regards for this. But they also think that you must be wealthy.
So do you work as far as the gallery goes, do you work on a regular sort of gallery arrangement where you're splitting the sales with the artist?
Yeah. The same formula that all the other galleries have. But, however, when I had the... And that was the first year. In order to encourage artists to join our community, and let's face it, they're, you know, the amateur artists, hobbyists, whatever. But I want to have that base here. I encourage them, and for the membership they would get, they got a whole bunch of benefits. And one of the benefits, they had a show here, which we did the first year. And that arrangement was different. They were getting the most of the money that they sold. So It wasn't what I have with other artists. They got the most. So, you know, I want to boost it to make it even more encouraging for them to do it. And still, you know, we just don't have this active.
Now, what are the prices for work like this?
Well, she's expensive only, and I have nothing to do with putting the prices. She says what it is, and I stay with it. And she has her reasons because of, you know, what she goes by with the other galleries.
Right, right.
They produce.
In a way, they sort of demand that the prices stay on the same level, right?
Yes, that's exactly right. Because let's for example, if some work sold much cheaper here than New York City, potentially you might have a collector that will drive up here to buy the work from here. I don't know.
Right.
That's the thinking anyway. So they try to maintain a consistency. But, you know, this prints, for example, are cheaper. There's several hundred dollars. For the small ones, for the big ones, are a little more. And for the original paintings, it's in the thousands. And at some point, again, I tried different strategies here. Like I said in the beginning, you know, the direction of the place, it keeps getting a different direction based on what you learn and based on the reality that you find. I had a show with six artists, and the concept of the show was all the works were under 200. And, you know, they were all original prints. Some of them were monoprints, not editions. I know I was one of them, and my works were only done once. Well, that concept didn't catch up either. So it's not, you can't really say that, there is a market here for much cheaper works, but there's no market for more expensive works. It works in different ways. The ones who will buy, they will buy. You know, that's what I have been told by the ones who are in the business for a long time. And it was always like that. So, but we have to try different things and different concepts and, you know, create your own following, so to say. But, you know, I have to say, above all, if you keep the quality, and I'm going to emphasize the integrity, I think at the end, that's what stays. You know, with all the self-promotion that goes on and this and that, at the end, over time, the integrity, I think, is what, you know, will make people or certain people to keep coming back. Yeah, you just, at the end of the day, you decide. You can't be all things to all people. And I've seen other places trying to do a little bit of this, a little bit of that. It's just, you know, you have to stick to your guns, so to say. It's what I'm doing, you know. Not to mention that we are rigid. I'm open-minded. I come from a multidisciplinary background, which means, you know, I worked in the film world. I did interdisciplinary projects, and that's how I think of this space. You know, I'd like to have events here that expand from the print image to, let's say, projected images, because I have done this before. But in my mind, it's all how it's curated. You know, it's all part of the same thinking. As I keep saying, it's all image making.
Well, thank you very much, George.
Oh, it's been a pleasure, Richard. Thank you for having me.